You're listening to Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and this is the week of October 23rd, and I'm Rob Greenlee. Thank you for checking us out from all over the world. We keep you plugged into the latest net trends of some of the coolest internet-connected devices and software, don't we, Dana?
Oh, yes, we do, Rob. Thank you. I'm Dana, and try to provide the web girl perspective a little bit. Some of the topics we'll cover this week are...
Billboard's 2004 Digital Entertainment Awards announced their finalists.
Ah, the web beats TV ratings when it comes to that famous Crossfire show of last week. And NewsGator, the RSS site online, is free.
Google doubles profit year over year for the first IPO quarter in their earnings report.
And digging into that digital mailbag, we pull out one from Nicole Simon from Germany. She's getting into podcasting.
With the presidential election just a few days away, the polls reveal that both Senator Kerry and President Bush are in a virtual tie. We're going to be speaking with Business 2.0's Eric Schoenfeld, who's going to join us later in the show, and he's going to discuss how tapping into paid search ads that run on search sites like Google could actually sway the vote.
I think that the reason that they're not using it more is, one, it's just a matter of bandwidth. The campaign is, you know, basically a sleepless endeavor. But on the other hand, also, I think they're not doing it because it's not proven. No one has really done it.
We all need a simple but powerful image or photo editor. And for most of us, a graphics editor like the full version of Photoshop was just too much software. Up next after the news, we're going to speak with Mark Dome. He's Adobe's product manager for Photoshop Elements 3.0. And he's going to tell us a little bit about this great alternative to the full Photoshop version. That's called Photoshop Elements.
The big problem for a hobbyist is overcoming that huge learning curve. And so we've done many things to the tools to make them easier to use. We've removed some of the unnecessary complexity so that people can actually get more done with the tools than if we had included all of the knobs and whistles that tend to really add to the noise of the user interface.
It's time for a brief summary of what happened on the web this week in news and trends.
Well, Dana, the Billboard magazine folks are coming out with their finalists for the 2004 Digital Entertainment Awards that are going to be held down in L.A. on November 5th.
I think it's interesting because, you know, Billboard always has the Billboard Music Awards. They're branching out. This is their first year, right, for the Digital Entertainment Awards?
Yeah, from what I understand, it certainly is. And it's really a sign of some of the changes that are going on down in Hollywood around the whole digital entertainment area.
I think we should run through the nominees. They have the nominees out. They'll be announced on November
5th.
Thank you. Why don't you run through the best of show? It sounds like a dog show, doesn't it?
Well, yeah,
it does. Visionary of the Year.
Yeah, and the nominees from that category are Mark Cuban, who is the, I guess, the original creator of Broadcast.com, which was sold to Yahoo years ago for billions of dollars. And he's now the chairman of HDNet, which is a basically a digital kind of broadcasting company that he's forming. And Rob Glaser, who's the chairman and CEO of Real Networks, is also on this list. Steve Jobs, CEO of Apple and CEO of Pixar. And Will Wright, who's a game designer that created SimCity and The Sims.
I just want to share the people that are nominated, the people and companies that are nominated for Innovator of the Year, because, of course, in the web space, we always really cherish the innovators. It's not about formula like television or something like that.
Yeah.
So this time, surprise, Apple iTunes. They are pretty much of an innovator in that space. I like this one, Bram Cohen. He's the creator of BitTorrent.
And he's up here in Seattle.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Dr. Richard Marks, and also Sony Entertainment America, and iToys' Hugh Pinero. And XM Satellite Radio. Wonder how Sirius feels about that.
Mm-hmm. And the brands of the year are Apple and the EA Sports, Virgin Mobile, and XM Satellite Radio. So it'll be interesting to see who wins all these. We're hoping to get the founder of this awards ceremony on the show here in the next couple of weeks.
It's a two-day event, by the way. It's not just an awards show. There's conferences and keynotes and such. So if you're in the LA area or want to travel down to see the Billboard Digital Entertainment Awards, partake in some of the educations going on there, you can search for them on the web.
Well, no, it's actually at the digitalentertainmentawards.com website.
Yep. Well, I love this next story because, well, Rob and I are both huge Jon Stewart fans. We love the man. I cry. I laugh so hard every night. And unless you live outside of America, you probably don't realize that Jon Stewart, who's sort of a humorous political commentary talk show guy, visited the Crossfire Show, which is a
CNN political punditry debate show, kind of, where the liberals and the conservatives are on each side of the desk, and they pretend like they're performers on each side of the fence, and they battle it out every night.
I think Rob's point is the same as Jon Stewart's point. They kind of pretend it's a little bit like a Tucker wears a bow tie. Anyway.
Political hacks, I think, is what John said about them.
So he was a guest on their show, actually, ostentatiously, to promote his book, America Injustice, which is quite an amazingly wonderful book. You can tell we're fans. But he was on as a guest, and it kind of got a little bit out of control, you know? And John just basically said what he felt about Crossfire and their obligation to present a show that's true as opposed to a little circus.
Yeah, well, he was a little insulting to the two guys that battle on here, saying that they were kind of political hacks and
they
were kind of disingenuous when they talked about the each side's political position, that they were actually hurting America.
Well,
or herding. I'm not quite sure. I think he was trying to say two things at the same time. Wow. I think he was trying to say herding and hurting America.
This is Rob's Jon Stewart impression. So the news story here, the web tie-in, is that about 550,000 people,
typically
watch Crossfire on television. Mm-hmm. Not this Friday. Well, this Friday, yeah, about that many, because who knew?
When John was on, there was a lot of people that really took a lot of interest in this and recorded it and basically put it up on websites and made it available. And it's been viewed 800,000 times or over 800,000 times
on
the iFilm site, and has been downloaded by over 70,000 copies of the via the BitTorrent download system.
So what he's basically saying is about twice as many people have seen it
exactly
after the fact than it saw it live. Isn't that wonderful?
Which really kind of gives you a glimpse of kind of how downloadable video and streaming video is going to have a significant impact, I think, on how people consume TV type content in the future. It's really a sign of change that's coming.
If you listen to our show, you remember that we talked with the founder of NewsGator a few weeks ago.
Greg Reneker, yeah, who's the one that created it.
And a little bit of news coming out of the NewsGator front in Denver, Colorado.
They have launched an online free version of the NewsGator. And what this is an RSS feed reader that you can basically go to their website at newsgator.com and get a free account and have it web-based, so you can basically access all your news feeds from any computer through a browser. And it also has the ability to export that same information via an upgrade to your RSS newsreader in your Outlook client.
Now, that'll cost you a monthly subscription fee, I believe.
But they have some premium channels, feeds coming in, and they're moving in the direction of delivering media, just like iPod, or we've talked about podcasting on here, and they're moving in that direction. But go check them out at newsgator.com.
Google also posted their earnings for the Q3 quarter.
Yeah, they did, and they showed a doubling year over year compared to last year. They had about a $52 million profit this third quarter. And it was basically more than double from $20 million a year ago. So what this really means is that Google is continuing to do well, and their stock will probably stay up high. This is actually revenue that's being generated off of sites that have Google Ads, is the AdSense program. That's generating a significant chunk of their revenue. And then the AdWords is actually generating most of the other revenue.
You'll find AdSense on Web Talk Radio's website.
Yeah, you will.
All right, let's reach into that digital mailbag, because we have one coming in from Germany, northern Germany. Nicole Simon entered something on our blog.
Yeah, actually, she basically made a comment to one of my posts that I had in there about how a lot of webcasts are lacking metadata. Now, what metadata is textual content that's embedded in the actual audio file, and how a lot of search engines and a lot of search type sites use that information to index the content of that. And she was frustrated and shocked about the fact that there weren't very many of that too as well, because it makes it hard to scan content and data. But she was trying to get in the podcasting business, and one of the reasons that she liked our site was because it looked like we did our homework, and we made it look like we were friendly and welcoming, and gave some information about who we were out there, and even gave transcripts. So she even liked James Spader's site that we talked about on the show here recently.
We incessantly talked about it.
Yes, we did.
JamesSpader.org. Would that be the site?
Yes, it was. Right. Yes. Yes. And I know Mitch had made that famous on our show. But thank you for the email, Nicole. And I look forward to having you come back and write some more comments. And I want to invite everybody out there to go visit our blog and make a post and comment on some of the discussions that are going on there.
I want to thank everyone for their support of Web Talk Radio, in particular, InfoCreek.com. They're a low-cost website design service. They're one of those few that does a 24/7 customer service, so they'll be working in the middle of the night if you have a question.
Yeah.
they make cool, high-tech-looking websites, so go check them out. Their portfolio page, they made our website. They're at InfoCreek.com.
Stay with us, because up next, Mark Dome, who's Adobe's product manager for Photoshop Elements 3.0, and he's going to tell us about his great alternative to the full Photoshop version, that is Photoshop Elements. You don't want to miss it. This is Web Talk Radio.
My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising.
I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like,
it's all he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of, like, English.
The Web Talk Guys, here and now.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. I'm Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me.
Thanks, Rob. Well, we all need something to handle our photos and our images, whether they're our home photos or maybe something we're doing for the website. But sometimes, you know, the full graphics program such as Photoshop is just a little bit too much software for us.
We have on the line with us Mark Dome, who's Adobe's product manager for Photoshop Elements 3.0, and he's going to give us the rundown on a great alternative to Photoshop CS, which is a very expensive software program. And he's going to tell us all about Photoshop Elements, which may be a great alternative for you. Mark, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Mark, I'm sure everybody uses Photoshop or has heard of it at least. I know I use it all the time. I use Photoshop Elements, and Rob uses Photoshop CS. But you have a brand new version of Elements coming out. We want to hear more about it.
Yeah, we're very excited about this version of Elements. Photoshop Elements 3.0 just shipped. It's available at the market. Photoshop Elements 3 brings together brand new components that really help anyone solve any problem they have with digital photos. So we primarily build the product for someone who's not a digital imaging professional. You don't have to have a lot of computer experience or digital imaging experience to use the program. The technology should be easy to use, and that's really what the heart of Photoshop Elements is all about.
So you really focus on the navigation or the tools to be sort of intuitive on that?
Absolutely. We understand how powerful the Photoshop technology has been, but the big problem for a hobbyist is overcoming that huge learning curve. And so we've done many things to the tools to make them easier to use. We've removed some of the unnecessary complexity so that people can actually get more done with the tools than if we had included all of the knobs and whistles that tend to really add to the noise of the user interface. And so we've really streamlined the application. And I don't think we've sacrificed at all the kinds of tools that people would want to do with their digital photos. And I'm sure pretty soon we'll be talking about some of the specific features, and you'll realize how feature-rich this program is.
Why don't you actually run down that list for us a little bit?
Okay. Yeah. For anyone who is getting a digital camera, if you haven't gotten one or you're thinking about getting one, you are soon going to have thousands of photos, and you're going to need to manage them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So this version of Photoshop Elements comes with its own dedicated photo organizer.
Mm.
It lets you set up a whole database for your photos so that now finding images can be lightning fast. We use this notion of tags that allow you to attach metadata to files.
Oh.
And then you can search on those tags. So to give you an example, if I take photos of my wife and my kids, when I go pull the photos off of the digital camera, I can attach the tags that have my wife's name and my kids' names on it. And then if I just click next to those tags, then those photos automatically appear. So I can manage literally thousands and tens of thousands of photos very easily. And then the Windows product has very elegant ways for you to see your entire library of photos in different ways. One way is we have a calendar view, so you can actually flip the view mode of your database so that you're literally looking at a calendar, a year or a month calendar or a day view, so that as you think about your digital photos, a lot of people think about how they took their photos in chronological order, and this calendar really helps people present the photos in a way that they remember taking them. Other ways that you can present your photos is newest ones first and, you know,
and of course,
ones last.
Just by the meta, right? So you could do like a search on vacation and it would come up that way.
Exactly, yeah. Getting at your photos should be very easy. So that's really what the database is all about. And we have the ability to attach tags on both the Macintosh and the Windows versions of the product. So your files are accessible regardless of the platform you're on.
Now, if you mentioned this was the database search was in Windows. Is that something that Mac's always had, or, you know, why not Mac?
We do have the ability to attach tags and search your metadata on the Mac as well.
Okay.
We have a different way of doing that. On the Macintosh side, we utilize a file browser, which anyone who's familiar with the previous versions of the program and even Photoshop CS, the file browser lets you view the files on your hard drive, and it gives you a graphic thumbnail of all the images that are in any given folder, and then it also gives you a metadata pane, and the metadata pane will reflect the EXIF information, the technical information that your digital camera usually attaches to your photos, and then we have the new tag pane, which lets you add the metadata and attach metadata to files. Another thing we've done, obviously, because Photoshop Elements isn't just an organizing application, it's also a great photo editor. And we've derived the core heart of the technology that's available in Photoshop Elements is derived straight from the professional-grade Photoshop application. But as I said earlier, we try to take some of the harsher edges off of the technology to make it easier to use. A great example of that is we're very happy to announce that this version of Photoshop Elements has a feature that Photoshop users have enjoyed for a couple of years now called the Healing Brush.
Mm-hmm.
And the healing brush allows you to very quickly brush over parts of a photo and make unwanted things go away.
Just without having to know what those unwanted things are.
Exactly.
It takes care of red eye and things like that.
Well, little marks on the picture, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, little marks, mm-hmm. moles, cuts, scratches on people's face. We find that that's the way most Elements users tend to want to use the tool. And what we did with Photoshop Elements is while we have the Healing Brush tool there, as we watched even Photoshop users use the Healing Brush, we found that its usability isn't always that easy. For example, you have to hold the Alt key down, click on a source point, and then paint somewhere else. And people just don't know that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've created a new tool in addition to the regular Healing Brush called the Spot Healing Brush. And what's great about that is you select the Spot Healing Brush and you just paint over the thing you want to go away. And it automatically creates a fill pattern and it blends it beautifully with the underlying image. Mm-hmm. So now it's a very simple to use version of the Healing Brush. And that's what mm-hmm. Elements should be all about.
This is fantastic because, you know, I've been using Photoshop for a few years, and I'm ashamed to say, I guess, I just barely scratched the surface. I wasn't even aware of the Healing Brush. I'm all into using the smudge or, you know.
Yeah.
It's great, though. That's great.
Well, these things should be easy and intuitive. And another great example of that, actually two more examples if we have the time,
mm-hmm.
is we've overhauled the Red Eye Correction tool. So we just weren't happy with the results of red eye correction in the previous versions of the program. It tended to generate really kind of a grayish-looking pupil for the red eye problem. And so this version of the red eye tool is absolutely drop-dead easy. Once you select the tool, you click, and you don't even have to click on the red part of the eye. You can click anywhere around the eye. And the tool is smart enough to go find the eye, find the red part, and make that red part go away and turn into a nice, rich black color. Looks absolutely realistic. You would never know the red eye was there to begin with. And as I said, using the tool is very easy. So I've got pictures that I've taken of, again, my family, where I've got six red eyes looking at me. And with this new tool, I can very quickly just six clicks on that photo, just anywhere near the eyes, and the tool does all the heavy lifting. And very rarely do I need to go in and tweak any of the algorithms for the red eye. If I do need to, this is something that kind of sets Elements apart from the other mid-range, you know, $100 solutions out there, is we have the controls to allow you to customize how that tool works. Most tools don't give you that degree of customization, but we've added that to this version of the program. And then one other last tool that we created, and this is only for Elements users. The Photoshop users don't have this yet. It's a tool that we created called the Cookie Cutter, and it's designed really to allow you to very easily just create a nice border effect for photos. We found as we were talking to our customers, so many of them now are interested in doing scrapbooking, digital scrapbooking, or just local printing on their hard drive, or even just creating an interesting visual effect border for if you're going to post images on the web. The cookie cutter tool is very simple. You load a shape, you draw the shape on the photo, you click OK, and it automatically crops the photo and gives you the edge effect. So it's a technique that if you were using Photoshop, you could certainly accomplish, but it might take you 7 or 8 steps, and we've just made that very easy with Elements.
So would you say that this the software is really good for like a person that wants to build a website and have really simple tools to actually resize pictures, maybe optimize them, create shapes and borders and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the common things that you would expect people need to do has to be easy. And even a tool as powerful as Photoshop Elements, if it doesn't make the basic things easy, then it's a frustrating experience for users. So why we had to nail the red eye. That's why the cookie cutter tool does make it interesting. And we've also integrated, I think, an extremely useful feature that we've, again, adapted from Photoshop CS, is a piece of the ImageReady code, which allows you to visually preview the original image plus the post-compressed image, and allows you to play with the various compression settings.
Yeah.
So you can change the output file format from a GIF to a JPEG and look at what the post-compressed file is going to look like. It allows you to make informed decisions about how much you want to compress your files to make them as small as they can possibly be, but it also gives you that nice visual preview so that you'll know exactly what the user is going to look like when they view it on the web.
Sure, it even tells you, I think, how long it would take to download it, the 28.8 and things like
that,
which is nice.
Well, we have that little mechanism in there that makes it very handy. So being able to prepare your images in a way that's absolutely the most efficient and the best looking is it's a key thing. And so that's why the Safe for Web feature is really one that, if you're building a website, is a critical tool to have. And then we also have a number of creations that we support. So the Windows version has actually an entire creation wizard where you can create greeting cards and calendars and web photo galleries. On the Macintosh side, we support web photo galleries and slideshows. And the slideshows you can create with Web Photo Gallery give you a very elegant index page, and you can click on the index page and it shows you a one-up view and lets you navigate throughout a whole collection of photos. And creating that only requires a few clicks to select the source files, create the pages. And so anyone who's creating a website can create a visually compelling website because these have themes, as you can imagine, baby themes and whatnot.
Yeah, that's great.
This is new to 3.0 that is not in the other Elements?
2.0 also had this web photo gallery feature, so we refreshed some new content to keep it sort of live and interesting.
Excellent. See, another thing I didn't discover.
Yeah.
It would help if I read the actual manual, right?
That's right.
We realize not everybody does that, so you're not alone in that confession.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us again? I know it just was released this week. Tell us the price point and how that compares to CS if anybody feels like they want to go full-fledged.
Yeah, well, Photoshop CS really is the tool that has the absolute most power, most control. If you want the absolute best, there's nothing better than Photoshop CS. If you've had previous versions of Photoshop, the CS upgrade is around $140, $149. If you haven't had a previous version of Photoshop CS, you can get the full product for around $600. So it's not an inexpensive piece of software, but again, it is the state of the art that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who is looking more to just get involved, maybe they're just beginning their whole experience for digital imaging, Photoshop Elements is the perfect solution for them.
Mm-hmm.
The Photoshop Elements Windows product is $99, and again, with that, you get all the software you need, from organizing to editing to sharing. The Macintosh version of the product is $89. What we did on the Macintosh side, because so many Macintosh users now are using iPhoto, rather than rebuilding the whole organization front end that we have on the Windows side into the Mac version as well, we've gone the route of integrating Photoshop Elements to iPhoto. so that iPhoto actually becomes the de facto organizer that you can use with Elements. And the Elements delivers the core of the editing features that people would want to make their photos look the best they can. And because we don't have all the same organizing front end on the Macintosh, it is less expensive. It's $89. And then for both of those products, if you had a previous version of Photoshop, or even if you had an old Adobe product that we designed for consumers called Photo Deluxe, both of those make you qualified for a $20 discount. So $20 off a $99, $79. So for relatively inexpensive price, you really are getting some great technology to make working with your digital photos a lot of fun.
Great, Mark. Well, thanks for joining us on the show. It was great to speak with you.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'd be happy to come back and talk at any time.
Okay.
And if we want to see examples at your website at Adobe, what would be a good place to go to? Examples.
If you go to www.adobe.com and under the product section, go to Photoshop Elements, and we have dedicated pages for both the Macintosh and Windows version of the product.
Excellent. Great.
Oh, thanks. And you can get the product at any retail store as well as adobe.com. So
and
major,
Amazon. And
yeah, Amazon, of course, but CompUSA, Costco, Staples, all the major retailers sell it as well.
Great.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, Mark. Take care. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
We've been talking to Mark Dohm. He's Adobe Product Manager for Adobe Photoshop Elements 3.0. Now stay with us, because in just a second, we'll be talking to Business 2.0's Editor-at-Large Eric Schoenfeld. He's here to talk about, well, the presidential campaigns as we close in on the last few days, and maybe how they could use paid search ads on the web in the search engines like Google to help sway that vote. You don't want to miss it.
This is Web Talk Radio.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk, totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for rejoining us. We're getting close to the final days before the U.S. presidential election here in the United States, and the web has become a very important part of the political process here in the States. Matter of fact, Nielsen NetRatings has just announced that the website Democrats.org is one of the fastest growing websites at home and the second fastest growing at work, and this is really a sign that the web is really coming into its own, and people are using it to find out information about what's going on with the political process here in the United States and about candidates. And one of the other areas that's really growing fast is the impact of search engines on politics. And that leads us right into the topic that we have in this segment. We're going to talk about how the presidential campaigns are using the search engines, but yet at the same time, they aren't fully using them yet. They're not getting into paid search yet at places like Google and Yahoo, where they can really drive some keyword campaigns that can really bring some attention to their candidates. And to talk to us about that, we have the editor of Business 2.0 on the line, and his name is Eric Schoenfeld, writes an article called Future Boy for Business 2.0, and he's going to talk to us about his article. And the title of his article is Political Campaigns Seem to Be Missing the Boat with Paid Search. Eric, thank you for joining us on the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote an article that's up on your website. It's part of your Future Boy column that you write that talks about how the political campaigns are actually missing the boat when it comes to paid search. Why don't you run down kind of your thoughts on that from the article?
Sure. So I do a column called Future Boy, which goes up every 2 weeks or so on business2.com, and anyone who wants to can subscribe to it for free and get it as an email newsletter. I have about 20,000 subscribers. And this one was out October 1st, so a while back. But the idea here was I had done some stories before about, you know, how this was the year that the web was really making an impact on the campaigns, mm-hmm. and how the different campaigns had really learned from what Howard Dean did early on with using the web to raise money, to motivate volunteers, and to organize volunteers, all the stuff that people did with meetup.org and letter writing campaigns that were almost automatically generated off the website,
yeah.
and all the issues. So they're really pretty savvy about, you know, how they're using the web. I mean, Kerry raised more than $80 million, right, just on the web. So then I started looking at, what about paid search? They must be doing stuff with paid search. And I found out that, in fact, they're doing very little. And paid search, of course, is sort of the business model of the search engines like Google and Yahoo's Overture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you type in a search term, and all those advertisement links that are on the side or sometimes highlighted on top, those are advertisers who, you know, paid for that search term and pay for every time somebody clicks on that link. And it's the most effective way of advertising on the web. Google's earnings just came out, and they went from $300-some million a quarter to $800 million some dollars. So they're on a more than a $3 billion run rate on this model. So apparently it works. But the campaigns are not using paid search to get to people who are looking to research different, you know, the campaign and different issues that are important to them. You know, maybe obvious terms like John Kerry or election, you know, there might be a link. But other than that, basically they're just relying on people finding their website and taking them right to the homepage. But there's a huge opportunity here. You know, let's say somebody wants to find out about these flu shots, right? That is a big issue today. They type in flu shots. Wouldn't that be a great opportunity, either the Kerry or the Bush campaign, to put a link that says, learn about our health care policy and what we want to do to make sure this doesn't happen in the future?
I mean, what's your thought on why they're not doing all this stuff? Because it seems like that they're doing pretty well with the organic search results. I mean, you type in a particular topic that is key to the campaign right now in the search engines, and they do seem to come up fairly well, you know, in the natural organic area or the free listings. There's also news articles and those kind of things. But
really,
but,
like what? I mean, other than John Kerry or George Bush, I don't think that that's true.
From what I'm seeing, they're still missing the sponsored links over there.
Right. I mean, type in Iraq. I don't see any, you know, John Kerry or Bush. You get an Iraq homepage, you know, the whitehouse.gov down the list a little bit, but it's not one of the top results. I think that the reason that they're not using it more is, one, it's just a matter of bandwidth. The campaign is, you know, basically a sleepless endeavor, and it's already hard enough to try to outreach all the normal ways through the candidates traveling everywhere through radio, television, print media, et cetera. And what they're doing on the web. So they probably, to be fair to them, they probably just don't have the bandwidth to do this one extra thing. But on the other hand, also, I think they're not doing it because it's not proven. No one has really done it. I talked to one of the folks who worked on the Howard Dean campaign, and they were just starting to experiment with paid search. And they were using not just paid search, but also there's a program that Google has. It's called AdSense, which is you can buy search terms on other people's websites. So whether those are blog or news sites or any content site where your word appears, you know, your ad can appear whenever somebody is reading that site on the site if the site is participating. I mean, what a great way for... You know, when the Swift boat controversy came up, a lot of people started reading about that on blogs, right? Wouldn't it have been really smart for Kerry to buy the Swift boat search term, and every time somebody reads about that on a blog, they have an opportunity to, you know, give their side of the story?
Yeah, I think that's a perfect fit for this, and it seems like, I mean, a lot of the keywords, I mean, you are right, most of the keywords, they are not coming up very well, but if they have an area on the site that's dedicated to a particular topic or a, you know, or a key issue, it does seem like that they're starting to get up toward the top of the search results. But that's not to say that they're doing, it seems like anyway, from what I'm seeing anyway, that they're doing very well in kind of cross-promoting over the top of their competitors' topics. And I think you had also mentioned in the article something about getting the topic as part of like a link next to a news article or something like that. And I think that's a terrific opportunity because then they can contrast that viewpoint much easier and kind of give that reader an alternative to that topic. But you also mentioned in here that it could really kind of help battle the whole issue of the spread of blogs and those kind of things and the discussions around blogs. Why don't you talk a little about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that what you're saying is right, and they are using Google. They're obviously aware of Google, and their strategy seems to be more one of search optimization, making sure that their site comes up in the natural result.
And that's free, so that's
right.
Probably
that's,
where they're at right
that's
now.
That's free, but, you know, these campaigns do not cost a lot of money. I mean,
no, they don't.
For $50,000 to $100,000, you could have a pretty, you know, comprehensive campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way that this works in the corporate world is you don't just buy 10 or 20 search terms. You buy hundreds or thousands of search terms,
exactly.
And you buy all of the different variations, the misspellings, et cetera. I talked to a search marketing consultant who was doing a marketing campaign for a company, and they have 2 million different search term.
Right.
You know, you can buy as many as you want because you only pay for the ones that people click on.
Exactly. That's true. Plus, if you factor in that it's getting harder and harder, I'm sure, for the campaigns to justify all that spending of millions of dollars on TV and radio ads, because they can't really quantify that and say, well, you know, I spent $50 million on a TV campaign, but my poll numbers didn't move.
Right.
You know, how can they justify that over time, especially as the search engines become much more popular and be the place that people get their news more in the future? I think they're going to have to move this direction.
Well, I think it's going to happen. And, you know, I think it's also just awareness among the people in the political world. I was talking to a political consultant who I was told was pretty tech-savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain to him how paid search works.
Yeah.
And he was really surprised. He said, oh, wow, that sounds like a good deal.
Huh.
You know, I would definitely do this. I mean, I have too many things on my plate right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's definitely – I had no idea, you know. And but if you think about it, what better way to reach voters on issues that matter most to them at the time that they're interested about them, right? I did a search. I had one of these marketing firms – Reprise Media do a search for me on different political terms, like the candidates' names, healthcare, Iraq, swift boat, veterans, outsourcing, terrorism. And just for the month of September, there were 10 million searches across Yahoo and Google for 30 terms. Now, that's 10 million opportunities to reach voters.
Yeah, I would say so too. I mean,
in states where, you know, it might be only a few hundred or a few thousand votes that it really make the difference, how can you not do that?
Yeah, well, and one of the other topics that you talk about is how if they did this, one of these guys just might win the election just from doing this.
I think it's so close. The election is so close that you know, any strategy that can gain a few hundred or a few thousand votes per state, you know, could be the difference between who's in the White House and who's not. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's more than, if done properly, this could result in more than just a few hundred votes. Because, you know, it's not just linking to your homepage to johnkerry.com or georgewbush.com. It's linking to that page in your website that specifically addresses that issue. So I type in healthcare, you should link to the healthcare page on John Kerry or George Bush's website.
Mm-hmm.
If I link, you know, to terrorism, give me your position papers on this. Or if I put in John Kerry, George Bush should give me opposition research on John Kerry.
Yeah.
Right? Or John Kerry and healthcare, give me opposition on his healthcare policies. There's a lot of sophisticated things that can be done that can really win over the minds and hearts of citizens here.
Stay with us, because we're going to come back and rejoin our conversation with Eric Schoenfeld of Business 2.0, and he's going to continue his conversation about how the presidential campaigns are using paid search. You don't want to miss it. This is Web Talk Radio.
Grab a board and surf the web with those crazy Web Talk guys right here, right now.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and we're talking with Eric Schoenfeld, who is a Business 2.0 columnist and has written an article about how the presidential campaigns are just not using paid search as a way to market their campaigns. There is another piece to this, too, and that is the information that's available and being indexed right now really truthful or accurate? I think that's another factor here in how effective any kind of a campaign like this might be. Is the information available online fact-checked and truth and honest? And I think from a large extent, it's probably not. It's probably very biased, you know, online, you know, information. I mean, if you do a search for, you know, a product or whatever, and you typically find that the product pages out there that are talking about the product are obviously selling the product more than likely. And
right.
They're going to be biased towards making that product look in the best light it can and not really be entirely truthful. So I guess that's got to factor in this at some point as well, if you look down the future.
Right. That's a concern for the people doing the search. But I guess I was writing this more from the point of view of, you know, the campaign.
Yeah.
Why aren't the campaigns using this as a strategy? I mean, obviously, if you're being taken to a campaign website, they're marketing to you. So you've got to take it with a grain of salt. But at least, you know, it gives them an opportunity to give them a chance to give voters an unfiltered message. Mm-hmm. Now, it's up to the voters and the citizens to really decide, you know, well, what's the source of this information, and can I trust it or not? So that's a different question altogether. And I think that's a very valid point on any information that's on the web.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at some point, we're going to have to get some way to verify the trustworthiness of a lot of these sources.
Oh yeah, that's true. Plus, Google actually jumps in a little bit and kind of filters links that they actually show on their website. And I guess what the Dean campaign had some issues with some of their ads getting pulled because of some negative information that was available on the opponent's website that they were linking to.
What was happening there was when somebody searched for one of the other candidates in the Democratic primary, so Al Sharpton or John Kerry or Gephardt, the Howard Dean campaign would give you paid search to their website. And, of course, on their website, they had opposition research about all of the other candidates. But they weren't linking directly to the opposition research. But nevertheless, the other campaigns complained, and Google pulled the ads. Now, this is something that they've done to corporations, but it becomes an interesting issue when they're doing it for political ads.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that censorship? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's true. And certainly this type of keyword campaign can be used to really move that ball forward as far as the whole negative campaigning aspect and reinforcing those topics that are going on online too. So it can be used, you know, as a way to manipulate kind of discourse and conversation as well, I'm sure.
Right, right. You might have many counter strategies. I mean, at this point, the campaigns are at not even at paid search 1.0 yet, right?
That's
true,
they're not
even using it for anything more than a few very basic terms.
Yeah.
But as it becomes more and more sophisticated, not only do you have these counter strategies, but the cost of the campaigns are going to go up because the cost of each term is based on how much other people are willing to pay for them. So these are political terms that maybe corporations today, you know, nobody really wants outsourcing or healthcare, so they're 5 or 10 cents a click. But if the campaigns start bidding against each other, they can become very expensive, and that in itself could become a strategy to try and deplete the campaign coffers of your rival.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think also we're probably seeing, and I don't know if you've seen any of this or not, but I'm just speculating that maybe some of these political action groups out there, you know, like the Swift Boat guys, maybe they did some search buys out there to propagate their message, but the campaigns aren't doing it. Is there any evidence that some of these independent groups are actually doing this?
Yeah, I think that they are. I mean, I've seen some searches for anti-Kerry and both anti-Kerry and anti-Bush groups. So in a way, they're almost more web savvy than the political campaigns themselves.
Yeah, and why is that? Is it just a personnel thing, do you think? I mean, it's always been my understanding or my thought that some of the leading minds in marketing are involved in these campaigns. I'm just surprised that they would be so
missing the boat on this. It is really surprising, but and I don't have a good answer for why they're not doing it. And that's what drove me to write the column.
Yeah.
I did speak to one person in the Bush, who works on the Bush E campaign, and his attitude seemed to be we're focusing more on optimizing the search results, and that's it was almost like he was trying to contain costs as opposed to maximize his outreach. Which
that's what it sounds like to me, too.
I mean, they're not really hurting for money, last time I heard.
No, there's like hundreds of millions of dollars, in their budgets, and it doesn't sound like they're even spending it all from what I'm reading online anyway.
Right.
So I don't know what they're saving it for, but it's really hard to say whether or not all the TV and radio ads are really all that effective. It seems like that a lot of the free publicity that they get is actually more effective.
And another thing they can do as well is they can link the paid search to either their ad campaigns or to their debates.
Yeah,
so if you listen to the debate, they kept on repeating over and over different terms, different words, and different issues. Why not buy those issues on Google so that when people want to learn more about it, you can give them a little bit more information than you can on a TV spot. Same thing with a TV ad.
Yeah.
You know what are the words that people are probably going to respond to. So you can link the different media together, and I think that's really going to be the future. And what's going to be interesting is, since it's on the web, it's very measurable, what the response rate is
to
these ads.
What topics and what things are important to the constituency out there. And I'm sure that video and audio are going to be more important as we move into the future with political, as far as streaming and download and those kind of things. Because, I know like the whole Jon Stewart thing with Crossfire and that whole discussion sparked almost 1 million streams and downloads, which was almost double what CNN normally gets for their broadcasts.
Right.
So I can really see how the campaigns could maybe use streaming video to really move their campaigns further forward as well. And there's nothing to stop them from putting links in Google to their streaming ads too, I'm sure.
That's a good point. And now that more than half of internet users in the U.S. have broadband, that definitely is something that's feasible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a question of text versus video. It's a question of sort of the interactivity versus the broadcast notion of TV versus the web.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, and I encourage all your listeners to sign up for my column. It's called Future Boy on www.business2.com.
That's great. Well, thanks for spending some time with us, and it's certainly an interesting topic, and I think that we're going to be seeing probably in another 4 years they're going to be a lot more sophisticated than they are now.
I think 4 years from now, a lot of what we're talking about is going to become rote.
And I'm sure by then there's going to be other issues that they're not taking advantage of by then, too. So.
Yeah, well, we can have another conversation.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Business 2.0 Editor-at-Large, Eric Schoenfeld, who's been speaking to us about his latest article about that the presidential campaigns have not been using paid search. And if you want to read more about his article, you can go visit Business 2.0 at business2.com, or you can just go visit the web Talk Radio website, and we'll have a link to it right up there on our front page. That's all the show we have this week, and we appreciate you joining us. We hope that you come back and listen to us next week, as we'll have another terrific show lined up to kind of spread the word about what's happening online. And thanks for letting us into your lives. And remember, our website is at webtalkradio.com, and we have blogs and RSS feeds and a constant stream of information about what's happening and latest information online. So go check us out, and we hope you have a terrific week. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.